From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
Welcome to Money Talk for the 1st of March, 2019. On this week's calendar, John Fogerty of Creedence Clearwater Revival is at the Riverside Theater this coming Thursday. The Bucks are in the middle of a Western road trip. They're in L.A. tonight with LeBron and the Lakers. And 4 weeks from today, it's the Brewers' home opener against the St. Louis Cardinals. Well, an upstate New York couple got into a heated argument about the pot plants the guy was growing in their house. So she called the cops, and he needed to get rid of the evidence, so he threw it in the fireplace. When the first responders arrived, the house was full of smoke. When the smoke cleared, the cops and the firefighters were seen sharing Girl Scout cookies and Cheetos. And speaking of fires, an A&W in Canada caught fire, and the entire roof was engulfed in flames. Fortunately, everyone got out safely, but this is where it gets goofy. While the firefighters were busy battling the blaze, those wacky Canadians continued lining up at the drive-thru. The only explanation might be found in the previous story. In the studio today, we have Kyle Tedding, Art Rothschild, Adam Bailey, Joel Dreesang, and wrapping up the week, here's Mark Amateas.
Well, thank you, Max. With the month of February ending on Thursday, U.S. markets finished the first 2 months of 2019 with their best showing in 30 years. As investors once again embraced stocks, international markets, both developed and emerging, joined the beginning of the year rally. This week offered a large slate of economic data and geopolitical storylines to fill the news cycle. Updates on GDP, consumer spending, and inflation were overshadowed by news on U.S.-China trade negotiations, the North Korean summit, and dovish comments by Fed Chairman Powell. With much to digest, equity markets lacked conviction in either direction and traded in a narrow range for the week. And for the week, the NASDAQ, the tech-heavy NASDAQ, was up 0.9%, 68 points, to close at 75.95. The S&P 500 was up 11 points, or 0.4%, to close at 28.04. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average was flat, down just 5 points, to close at 26.026. For the year, boy, looks pretty good so far. The NASDAQ up 14.7%, S&P 500 up 12.2%, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 12.1%. 10-year U.S. Treasury started the week at a yield of 2.65% and closed up 11 basis points at 2.76%. And that's a quick look at the week in review. Well, Joel, as I mentioned in the review, we had a lot of economic data come through this week. A number of things on housing, on consumer confidence and sentiment, et cetera. What struck you as one of the bigger stories this week?
So, you know, looking at it overall, Mike, I think we're still seeing the trend that the economy is growing, that we're still, you know, doing okay. We're coming out with our monthly newsletter at the end of the podcast, and we have a video connected that with that that Kyle did on recessions. And, you know, we know that recessions happen, and it's going to be inevitable, but we don't know when. And from the data that we saw this week, it looks like it's not going to be anytime soon, which means that we're, you know, looking at having, you know, we're going on the record longest economic expansion. But with the data, we're also seeing that things are slowing down. So, you know, if we look at the GDP numbers for the fourth quarter, the GDP was estimated at the economy was growing at 2.6% a year, and that's down from 3.4% in the third quarter and 4.2% in the second quarter. And we look at consumer spending a lot because that's about two-thirds of, you know, what drives the economy. And so some of the numbers that we got from the GDP report on that showed us that the fourth quarter consumer spending was an annual rate of 2.8%, and that's down from 3.5% the quarter before. And then if we looked at the consumer sentiment numbers, judging from those, they're expecting that spending is going to go down to 2.6% for the year. So, but it's still growth. It's just that it's slowing.
Adam, you had some thoughts on the GDP report. We were talking a little before the show.
Yeah, you know, my first thought was we ended the year kind of softer but solid. And for me, I think the fourth quarter GDP report, you need to juxtapose that against what happened in the market in the fourth quarter. You know, investor sentiment was just so bearish and so pessimistic in the fourth quarter, specifically in December, where investors were just worried that, okay, you know, this government shutdown is somehow going to hurt economic growth, or this lack of a trade deal with China is somehow going to impact the economy. And you know what? That didn't materialize at all. The Commerce Department did say that we had like, what, a tenth of a percent shaved off of GDP because of the government shutdown. But even still, a 2.6%, that's softer but still solid economic growth. And for me, I think that the biggest bright spot was in business spending. You mentioned consumer spending, but business spending, R&D spending was up 13.5%, equipment spending up 6.7%. And we spent so much of last year talking about how businesses were spending their cash on buybacks and not property, plant, and equipment. Perhaps that we're starting to see that change in the fourth quarter. A little too early to tell, but I really appreciated seeing that inside of the GDP numbers.
Joel, you mentioned the consumer sentiment and confidence. And we had one of those times where we had a divergence between sentiment and confidence. Do you want to speak to that a little bit?
Sure. You know, in both of those, and they're different surveys run by different organizations, and they look at different things. The consumer sentiment numbers are more consumer-based and asking consumers how they feel about things like inflation and their income, and the consumer confident numbers are more how do you think businesses are doing? How do you think that the job picture looks? And there was a little divergence on that. So the consumer confidence numbers, it was higher than expected. It actually went up for the first time in 4 months. And some of that is addressing what Adam was talking about, that, I mean, conditions changed a little bit, you know, in the last couple of months. And so, you know, people are feeling a little bit better about, you know, where things are going. And the consumer sentiment numbers, they were down a little from what they were at the, they do a reading on that earlier in the month, and it was down a little from that, but it was still up from January. And again, it's still looking, you know, people are feeling better about how things are, in part because the stock market's doing better. There's that wealth effect, and we were seeing that in some of the housing numbers too, that affects how, you know, people feel about investing in real estate. But also because of things like the government shutdown. And even though the economic effect, the long-term economic effect of the government shutdown might not be that much, it had a short-term effect on people's psychology.
And we had three reports this week regarding housing. We had housing starts, we had building permits, and we also had the pending home sales index, which was higher than expected. The other two were lower than expected. What do you see there? How do you, again, explain that divergence?
Yeah, again, I'm seeing, you know, I'm looking at a lot of the longer term numbers on those, and just sort of seeing that things are slowing down more. The Case-Shiller Home Price Index, for instance.
Yeah, that's a fourth one. Excuse me. That's right.
Right.
That's actually
and
the fourth.
Yeah, and that's showing, and we've been seeing this for months now, that the year to year increase in home prices, even though they're still, you know, outpacing inflation and wage growth, that's going down. Each month it's a little tighter than the month before. The housing starts were lower than expected. That was down. The building permits actually looked a little bit better, but if you take out of that the single family housing permits, that was down to the lowest level since August. So some of the trends are again pointing in the direction of continued growth, but it's just a little weaker.
And the other one was the pending home sales index, higher than expected following the decline in December. So I guess, you know, the analysts say that lower mortgage rates and rises in income and inventory are boosting demand there. Housing's kind of been the laggard in this economic recovery, wouldn't you say?
Right, yeah, and there's some housing economists who kind of think that we peaked as far as the housing expansion, you know, maybe in November of 2017, and, you know, we've just sort of been going sideways since then.
Kyle, we talked before the show. You had some thoughts on earnings reports coming out. Tell us what you're seeing there.
Yeah, Mark, always helpful, I think, just to get an update on where we stand on the earnings front. And with the vast majority of companies now, I think there's about 15 left to report fourth quarter of 2018. With the vast majority of companies having reported, I think safe to say, you know, full year earnings growth for 2018 was exceptional. I think that was reflected very much in the growth that we saw in the stock market in 2017 and the early part of the year last year. And then, you know, maybe just to further highlight something we've talked about the past couple of weeks now is that, you know, the expectation for earnings growth in 2019 is not nearly what we thought it was even, you know, as of September, as of kind of the beginning of the fourth quarter last year. I mean, now talking pretty seriously about the fact that at least for the first quarter of this year, we're going to see probably earnings decline from where we were last quarter. We're probably going to see maybe full-year earnings growth a little bit less than 5%. And so I think the worst forecasts tend to come right near the end of the quarter, and then we tend to see things pick up a little bit from there just as people start to report, as those companies start to report those earnings. But, you know, you kind of put all that together and you put the other stuff we're talking about here together with the fact that maybe the growth rate has started to slow down a little bit, that maybe we're reaching the end phase of this cycle. And I think it paints the picture of a market that, at the very least, maybe doesn't have the same robust growth it does. And yet when you look at things like valuations, we're not talking about a market that's overly expensive here. Certainly maybe back to after this great run we've had, a little bit expensive, but depending on how you look at it, it's right around average in terms of trailing PEs, in terms of forward PEs. And so I think investors need to keep that in mind, that while the earnings growth doesn't paint a picture of a market that's going to see substantial price growth, you know, we could certainly see an expansion of the multiple that would allow prices to move higher here. And it's not out of the question with where rates are to see that happen. So, you know, not overly concerned about the lack of earnings growth that we expect this year. I think we had backed off those expectations early enough that as investors, we're not going to be too surprised by that. But well, it is interesting to see that, you know, we are seeing that come back down a little more.
You know, I think it's also smart to realize why earnings aren't going to be growing as much as they were last year. Part of it is just the fading of the tax incentives that we got last year, and those kind of just falling off by the wayside. So you don't have the acceleration of earnings like we had in the past. You look at first, second, and third quarter of this year, earnings expectations not expected to be all that good. It's the fourth quarter. I mean, that's where so much it really needs to materialize. So if you're going to be paying attention to earnings anywhere, we got to be watching fourth quarter, because that's really where all the gains are expected to come
from.
Well,
and Adam, you talked about research and development spending. You talked about where money had been spent in previous years and hopefully where we see it spent this year and kind of in the quarters beyond. If we see some of that corporate spending, if we see some of that big money moving, you know, that helps the employment picture, it helps consumers, it helps the housing market, all these other things. It also probably drives the potential for future earnings growth that those companies are spending more money on other goods and services. And so, you know, I think we could be in this environment where things are slow for a little while, and that doesn't mean you have to fall into recession. It might just mean that things are slow for a little while.
You know, we talked about what a great first 2 months we've had this year, the best in three decades. I think that a number of things contributed to that: a more dovish Fed, better than expected corporate earnings, as you pointed out, Kyle, the U.S.-China trade negotiations, the potential for some resolution there started looking better. You know, in fact, just recently, the U.S. withdrew the threat of another $200 billion in tariffs on China. So all those things I think help, but I think it really is important for investors to understand that, you know, we had a 19.8% correction that bottomed out on Christmas Eve in 2018. And then we've had a great run up since then. And it just, again, I think, reiterates how investors need to stay the course. They need to stay cautious, but stay the course. These things, when they're happening up or down, can become very emotional. You got to put that aside and understand you're in it for the long haul. And as long as you're sticking to your plan, stay with it. You know, another example is industrial stocks. They've had a great run. They were pummeled earlier, and now they'll probably slow down. And some other sector will take over. And that's another thing that we talk about is don't try to chase performance. Be well diversified so that no matter what sector is, you know, in vogue at the moment, you're covered. You've got some money in there, but you've also got your money spread around. So when it goes down and something else lights up, you know, you're in good shape there as well. Just a lot of things for people to think about and understand with this basically 20% upward move in the S&P 500 that we've had. We're due to have at least a minor back up in the markets. You know, nothing goes straight up forever. So keep that into perspective and understand that all those things, you know, are possible.
And also, at the very least, just we got to pause and catch our breath after what was 9 consecutive up weeks for the Dow. Okay, we didn't have an up week this week. That's okay. But I think the market just paused and catched its breath and it consolidated before we can move forward from here. And I appreciated seeing that this week.
But the reality is that this rally, it simply brings us back to slightly above where we were 13, 14 months ago. Literally, I just did a calculation looking at the S&P over the past 13 months, 14 months, including February, is up 5.5% or 5.5%. So we just got back money that we, as you guys suggested, lost in the panic selling of late last year. But let's not lose sight of the fact there are two things you guys talked about that I think are very important to appreciate is the fact that we're never going to see another, I don't think we'll ever see another year like 2018 for profit growth because of the tremendous impact, as you indicated, from the tax cuts. Second part of that that's really important to understand is the comparisons we're doing are comparisons, as you guys indicated, to that year. So we're growing over a year in which corporate profits were up 20%. Any growth is positive. But the real point I want to make is that the stock market is the leading indicator. And again, as you guys suggested, if we do get resolution of the Chinese, you know, trade conflict, on top of the fact that the Federal Reserve has indicated they're going to be very patient in terms of when they're going to raise rates, we could see the market going up, as Bob has suggested on the show in the past, in anticipation of better things ahead. And so that's what I think we have to hope for. That having been said, if anyone is getting scared because of volatility, it never hurts to reallocate and rebalance to a level that you're more comfortable
with. There's never a wrong time to rebalance.
Correct. And this is a good point at which you might want to call your advisor. We're calling our clients, obviously, on a regular basis and say, hey, you know, the ride's been fun. You know, it was a thrill losing money we lost in October and December, but it's a lot more fun making it back now. Now I'm at a level, you know, point on the platform. It may be time to step aside and get on a slower ride.
And just to point out, nobody lost money unless they sold, right?
You know, I don't believe that.
that's a topic for another day. speaking of China, Kyle, you had some thoughts on the Chinese stock market and its inclusion in the MSCI index. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so historically, the MSCI Emerging Market Index has relied heavily for Chinese exposure on kind of those global Chinese companies, but less so on what we call mainland Chinese companies, those companies, I think, that are much more tied to the Chinese economy, much more tied to the Chinese consumer. And so, you know, for investors who were really hoping to gain exposure to that market opportunity, to the development or the growth of that emerging middle class there, oftentimes, you know, the Chinese companies that showed up in the index, the ones that they could easily participate in global markets, were not necessarily the ones directly exposed. And so what Morgan Stanley Capital has done with the MSCI Emerging Market Index is they've now recognized that some of those mainland China stocks are a little more accessible than they were 2, 3, 4 years ago. Even over the last couple of quarters, China's allowed more money to flow into those markets. And so recognizing that, they've increased the exposure of those stocks within the Emerging Market Index. So, you know, the good news for those stocks is they're going to see some capital that they've never seen before. They're seeing money come in that maybe they've never seen before. The bad news for investors, though, and this is, I think, the piece that's so important to remember, is that if you're strictly an index investor, you've got exposure now to a whole bunch of stocks that you've never had exposure to before, because that change in the index is a pretty significant change. I mean, we're talking about a couple of percent move in terms of allocation exposure. You know, and there's very good reasons why those stocks never existed in the index before. Those reasons didn't go away overnight, despite the fact that one index provider has decided that maybe there's some room for them now. And I think the other piece of this is that, you know, we've talked quite a bit about valuations in China, a number of articles recently talking about how China maybe looks a little bit cheap right now. And at the same time, the stuff that's cheap is probably cheap for a reason. And a lot of that is Chinese financials, most of which are mainland Chinese stocks, things that are going to be coming into the index. A lot of those are the Chinese consumer stocks where, yeah, you'd love to have some growth there. But at the same time, China's still undergoing this structural change that is going to be a pretty big deal for them. And so I think it's just a really strong reminder for investors that it's not enough to simply say, yeah, I've got this index, that's my emerging market exposure, because you really have no control over what it is you're buying. You're just purely at the mercy of whatever the rules that construct that index are. And so especially in a market that can be that differentiated, really important that you're investing with someone who's got boots on the ground, who can understand the stocks that they're buying, understand that just because China says their growth rate is 6.5 or 7%, it doesn't mean that it really is, that you can't trust that data, that you really need to understand the underlying business. And so, you know, I think it'll be a really big deal for a lot of those companies. At the same time, I think a lot of investors could be burned by this.
Art, I know you had some thoughts on fixed income. We were talking about that before the show. Why don't you tell me what you're thinking there?
Trying to keep it safe. If last year showed investors, especially balanced investors, anything, is that they can lose money in their bond funds when interest rates go up. Other concerns we had over the course of last year were increased risks of a potential recession and concerns about triple B bonds being downgraded to junk status. This year, quite frankly, it's the opposite. The more risk you're taking, the longer your duration, the more money you've made this year. I personally determine, I think as a firm for the most part, we've moved in this direction. We're not putting money in fixed income to, quote unquote, make money. We're putting money in fixed income for safety. So I think it's important for our listeners to evaluate the quality of bonds, continue to evaluate the quality of bonds in their portfolios. One measure I'm looking at through the end of last week, high-yielding bonds were up 6%, you know, for the year. That means that people are buying lower quality bonds, and that's risky. So be careful. Don't take too much risk. Don't chase returns. And try to keep your fixed income safe. We've talked about cash. Yields have gone up on CDs and money markets. And it, to quote the Eagles, it gives me a peaceful, easy feeling to know that I won't lose as much, you know, in my fixed income if I play it safe.
And just to put that 6% in some perspective, Art, if you look at the aggregate bond index through the end of February, it's up 1%. So just your typical high-quality bonds, I mean, the aggregate bond index, largely treasuries and agency debt. But if you look at that compared to what you're saying in the high-yield market, remember that anything that can go up 6% can probably go down 6%. And so, you know, I think it's just a great reminder that, yeah, there's some opportunity to be had in high yield, or maybe there was some opportunity to be had in high yield when spreads widened at the end of the year, when you got paid a little more for that risk. But just as that thing can go up 6% as those spreads start to narrow again, you're not being compensated for that risk again.
All you have to do is look back to 2008, right, when the high yield junk bond market went down over 25%. Yeah. You can lose money in bonds. So stay high quality. Exactly. Watch your durations. Well, that's another edition of Money Talk. Thanks for listening. We enjoy doing the show. Tell your friends, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.